Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening once again. My name is R. Lee Gordon with the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo and the National Youth Movement. You are listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show produced by Leslie Gist Etheridge, and we are very excited to have with us on tonight's show Jacob Morris, who is director of the Harlem Historical Society. He has done some very meaningful work in having street names after famous African Americans. Mr. Morris, are you on the line with us tonight, good man?
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Morris. Can you hear me?
I can. You sound you sound excellent.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that, considering we had some technical issues a little earlier tonight, but that's good to hear because we do want everyone to be able to listen to tonight's show and hear about some of the wonderful works of the Harlem Historical Society. And then we'll even talk about some of your other endeavors, because I know that you are indeed a very prolific man, undertaking a variety of things to empower, inform, educate, and uplift. But let's kick things off with a conversation about the work of the Harlem Historical Society in dedicating street names, street sign names, in honor of famous African Americans.
Okay. That sounds like a good place to start. One of the things that happens is it's like, how did it start? You know, how did we get involved with doing that? And you know, before I went up to Harlem and got involved with naming streets in Harlem after great African Americans who lived in Harlem, you know, I actually started as a scholar of New York City's role in the Underground Railroad and the abolitionist movement. And, you know, I was motivated because, you know, it bothered me that I knew that New York City had a profound role in the abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad, but it wasn't really in the history books. And, you know, so I was actually trying to write this federal grant on behalf of a friend of mine's nonprofit. And it looked like the funding was going to get cut. This was somewhere around the year 2005. Or the year 2004, you know, in regards to, well, what I was told by the director of the Underground Railroad Information, Education, and Dissemination Grant Program was that it looked like the funding was going to get cut by the Bush administration because of the, you know, the war in Iraq. Fortunately, it wasn't, but at that moment in time, it looked like it was, and I was very upset. And at this point, I was, like, very invested in the story, so had this inspiration to, like, well, I asked myself the question before I went to sleep that night that I got the terrible news that the funding was going to get cut for this education program. And it was substantial money. It was like $750,000. And so I said, well, how do I tell the story without the money? And I woke up in the morning, and I had like, you know, this image in my mind of a map of Lower Manhattan. And on it was like this point where Frederick Douglass landed when he escaped from slavery when he was 20 years old. And there was so many things that, you know, naming that location after him would bring out, you know, like it would tell the story of how he connected with the Underground Railroad. It would show New York City's role in it as a pathway, a major pathway. And so I had to teach myself how to name streets, and, you know, and I did it. And so then I, you know, once I became acquainted with the mechanism, I thought, well, okay, there's so many other, you know, great black abolitionists in New York City that I could get honored. And indeed, I did name about four streets after black abolitionists, including Abolitionist Place in downtown Brooklyn, which had a cluster of abolitionists living up and down Duffield Street. Which,
well, you know, it's funny, Jacob. Personally, I'd like you to share with our listeners the names of streets that your organization has been able to rename. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about the fact that there are so many street names of slave masters and slave owners throughout New York City, and maybe you can shed a little bit of light on this, because this is something I recently found out, especially here in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's fascinating. I'll get to that, like, in a natural progression, because there was actually something major that happened that involved the city council and the mayor and Councilman Charles Barron, and I'll get to that. And that involved the whole guidelines with naming streets in New York City. New guidelines had to get drawn up. There was actually a freeze on street names for about 14 months because of, you know, circumstances surrounding that issue that you just raised. Anyway. You know, so I learned how to name streets. I became, like, very knowledgeable on the mechanisms and procedures for naming streets in New York City. And so I became better at speaking. I came to redefine myself as what I call a popular historian, which, you know, you have to, you know, or a public historian, you have to communicate history to the public. And, you know, that's like its own field. You know, usually public historians work for, they're like educators that work for historical societies and history museums. Some work in academia, and some are like town historians, things like that. But, you know, the essence of a public historian is to be able to communicate history to the people. I love it. I love it, you know, because, you know, for me, history, well, I like bringing history to life. I like it being relevant. I like showing its relevance to, you know, people today. you know, I know that we laugh, you know, about so many of our young people think history started when they were born. And how surprised they get when, you know, when they're like informed that, no, the same thing happened, you know, 50 years ago or 200 years ago or longer. You know, and that if they knew about history, they could learn lessons from it, maybe not make the same mistakes that somebody made 100 years ago. It's really you know, it's kind of, you know, fun and educational, and we learn. So anyway, you know, I like, personally, I like the stories of great people, that really great people, historically significant people that that have been relatively forgotten. And one of the people that I really valued very highly was Charles Hamilton Houston, who was the mentor. Well, I see him as one of the three greatest leaders of the 20th century in terms of civil rights. But not that many people have heard about Charles Hamilton Houston. They heard of Thurgood Marshall, but they don't know that Charles Hamilton Houston was the gentleman who, well, he got the Howard University Law School accredited by the American Bar Association. He educated that whole generation of great black attorneys that came out of Howard Law School primarily. He schooled them in being better than the white lawyers. He said, you know, if you know, you're going to go up against the best, and you got to be better. You got to be rigorous. And he trained them that way. He was the first black editor of the Harvard Law Review, early 1920s. A legal genius. And just one of the great things he did was he came up with the strategy to overturn Plessy versus Ferguson, the separate but equal doctrine, by using it against itself. Brilliant, brilliant strategy, and it worked. It led to Brown versus Board of Education. But unfortunately, he died in 1950 before Brown versus Board of Education, and so everyone, you know, these days forgot about him. But I always felt very strongly that, you know, that people should know more about this great, great, and tremendously historically significant gentleman. And then when I found out that that he lived in Harlem, I said, "Wow, this is my opportunity to get this guy honored." you know, he lived at the Dunbar Apartments in Harlem for about 3.5 years when he was the first special counsel to the NAACP. That's when he came up with this, you know, strategy on how to overturn Plessy versus Ferguson. And so he got it going during that period of time while he was living here in New York City in Harlem. So I said, wow, I could get a street named after this guy. That would be dynamite. but then I said, gee, a lot of people don't know about Charles Hamilton Houston, and, you know, who am I to go up to Harlem and say I want to get a street named after this gentleman? But I did more research, and as I looked into, you know, the history of the Dunbar, and I was, like, just knocked out by how many incredibly great luminaries lived there. You know, like W.E.B. Du Bois and A. Philip Randolph and Matthew Henson, who just happened to be the greatest explorer, black explorer of the 20th century and co-discoverer of the North Pole. And
okay,
they all
Jacob,
lived at
Jacob.
The Dunbar.
Yeah, Jacob, before we go on, I wanted, let's talk a little bit more about Charles Hamilton Houston. Leslie, who's the producer of the show.
Well, you know,
hold on a second. Hold on. I just want to share with our listening audience that there is some footage of him depicting the difference between black and white schools on YouTube. And I would encourage our listeners and those who are more interested in seeing some footage about Charles Hamilton Houston to go on YouTube, search him out, learn a little bit more about his great work. Also, you talked about the Dunbar Apartments, right?
Right.
And that wasn't that originally one of the first black banks in New York City?
Well, they had a branch there. You know, it was built by by the Rockefeller family for middle class blacks as a co-op, but it became a rental with the Great Depression.
Okay.
But it was still, considered to be one of the stellar addresses in Harlem for the Harlem elite. It had some absolutely, phenomenal people living there.
Right.
So,
and let's also recap, and you probably already know this, Jacob, so again, I just want to make sure that we share as much information with our listening audience so that while we will talk about a variety of things, we make sure that they understand how they can get more information about each thing that we speak to. And in that capacity, I'd like people to know that there's a movie called The Man Who Killed Jim Crow. And that movie directly speaks to the genius and the professional life of Charles Hamilton Houston. So, again, I want people to go out there and learn a little bit more about their history. Again, the movie is called The Man Who Killed Jim Crow, and it's just one way that we can learn more about these great leaders, great African-Americans who, as you already suggested, Jacob, by and large aren't as widely known among our people and rightly should be.
Very, very well put. There's another series, The Rise and Fall of Jim Crow, which was this four-part series on PBS. It's pretty hard to get, but it's absolutely, a phenomenal series. And there's another movie called With All Deliberate Speed, which was that famous phrase in the decision put forth by the Supreme Court for Brown versus Board of Ed that the South should desegregate, quotation marks, with all deliberate speed. And so an excellent documentary movie was made with that title. And in it, they go into, Charles Hamilton Houston's role with the dismantling of separate but equal, the separate but equal doctrine.
Wow, that's very fascinating.
In the movie, yeah, you would enjoy it. I hardly recommend it. That one's more available, actually.
And what's the name of it?
With
the Rise and Fall of
With All Deliberate Speed.
With All Deliberate Speed. Okay,
take note
of that.
Excellent documentary. Excellent.
Okay. And if people, let's just put it out there too, Jacob, that if people want more information about any of the topics we're discussing tonight, please feel free to call me at 734-395-3079. We will be more than happy to forward them more information about the things that we're speaking to tonight. Okay? And so we're talking about, we're talking with Jacob Morris, and the director of the Harlem Historical Society. And I want to focus again on the naming of our streets in New York City by African Americans, or making sure that this is one wonderful way that we can begin to bring attention and bring light to their contributions to not just us as a people, but to society in general. And so let's get back to some of the names of African Americans who your organization has been able to get them their names up on the signs, on street signs.
Well, I actually, by the way, these days, they don't usually actually approve the renaming of a street. They just call it a co-naming. That way people don't have to worry about their mail getting lost.
Okay, well, I guess that sometimes we have our priorities to screw up in this country, but that's another conversation, Jacob.
Hey, that's, I'll tell you, it's
but
a
also,
funny
I suggest by any means necessary. So, again, you're still, I would suggest, achieving,
what do they call it, the prosaic aspects of naming streets. It's
you're
like,
still
oh,
achieving.
Yeah, okay, let's honor them, but I want my mail to come to
sure.
me.
like we all need more bills. Now,
or junk mail.
right. So, Jacob,
well, once
again,
in a while, I guess something important comes,
One of the things you mentioned that's pretty interesting, I think, is the fact that you have to get petitions. You have to get people's signatures to have enough votes so that what you then put it to city council.
Well, you have to show
okay
community
it.
Support. This is very interesting, because in New York City, every community board, there are no uniform guidelines within the community boards. guidelines got written for the city council, actually, I'm like personally responsible for, unfortunately, about 90% of those guidelines. But what they did was they took, they interpreted what I wrote like very rigidly, and they left out any flexibility. So, for example, you know, I put in a suggestion in the proposed guidelines that I wrote to break this deadlock, you know, that was that had ensued between Charles Barron and Christine Quinn as Speaker of the City Council in regards to his initiative to name four blocks of Gates Avenue, who was a slaveholder, by the way, in Brooklyn. He was, I believe, a general in the Revolutionary Army and had some slaves. So anyway, they wanted to name four blocks of this street after Sonny Carson, who was a very controversial kind of a guy. Brooklyn activist and you know, even Mayor Bloomberg got involved with that. You know, he said, what did he say? Oh, yeah, Sonny Carson didn't deserve to get a street named after him because he was a divisive figure. Yeah. And streets should only be named after, this is what he said. He said streets should only be named after people that were unifiers, not dividers. You know, and I thought about that. I really did. I thought about that, and I said, well, gee, you know, they got Malcolm X Boulevard. But wait, actually, you could make the argument that when Malcolm died, he was a unifier and not a divider. So,
Right. And then I also like,
yeah,
Jacob,
you know, stuff like that. You know, you think about
Jacob. Like that. Think about that statement. Think about the ludicrousness of that statement simply by, again, the fact that there are so many of our streets named after slave masters. Would we consider them, by and large, to be unifiers?
Definitely not. But, you know, first of all, you know, that, you know, you can always, like, society evolves. So, you know, what happened in the past happened in the past, and then you can come up with new policies. So, like, yeah, even with the Constitution, you know, which is a great example. You know, at one point they only counted black people as 3/5 of a human being.
Right.
You know, and they did amendments and they changed that. You know,
right.
After the
Civil
War.
So now are we about 4/5 now? I still don't see any equal. I still don't see equal rights, Jacob.
You know, that's what they call biting social analysis, Lee.
Exactly. Anyway,
I really like that, man. That was a home run.
Thank you.
Just to build on what you just said with that point, which I think is very, very profound, actually. You know, a perfect example of what you just, like, said, you know, is it may be worse than that in reality in regards to young black males.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
that's right.
'Cause it's documented, for example, in reality in 2009 by this report from the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University, that if a young black male drops out of high school, on any given day, 23% of them will be locked up behind bars. 23%. That's like 1 in 4.
Right.
And that's
even
not
that,
probation. That's not parole. That means behind bars. So,
right.
That, you know, is there disparate treatment of especially young black males in our society right now in the year 2010, and the answer is absolutely yes, which is another reason why I do the work that I do. I want young people to be aware that there's so many great role models in so many different walks of life historically that they can choose from to think about emulating or learning from, that they don't have to just, think about Kobe Bryant or LeBron James or P. Diddy.
Right.
That they could think about, becoming a great black labor leader like A. Philip Randolph or a great scholar like W.E.B. Du Bois or James Brown there's so many possibilities, to fulfill your potential as a human being. And God knows that. Well, I'll tell you what.
Okay, Jacob, let's get back to the three fists then. Because,
yeah, so I'm going to read off some of the people that we've gotten honored.
Yeah, let's go to that.
I'd like you to just have a good time and jump in wherever you feel like.
I'm trying, brother.
In terms of, who was who and who did what. A. Philip Randolph Boulevard. Billie Holiday.
Hey, Jacob, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I have to jump in here because I really don't like that comment about three-fifths of a man. And I,
it was in the Constitution.
Well, do you know how it came about? It was a compromise.
Yes, absolutely. It was a compromise between the North and the South, between the New England states and the Southern states.
And who won it what?
Well, if the North hadn't compromised on that point with the South, we wouldn't have had the United States of America.
But what did the North want and what did the South want?
Well, the North wanted blacks to be counted as a whole person, and the Northeast.
Right, but they couldn't vote, correct?
And the South didn't want blacks to be counted at all.
No, you're wrong. That is totally wrong. The South, because each state is given representation based on the population and census, the South wanted to count the slaves as a whole person, even though they were not allowed to vote, similar to what's going on in the prison systems today. So even though you're not able to vote, the South wanted to count blacks as a whole person. The abolitionists said, no, they shouldn't be counted as a person at all until they are given their full citizenship. You should not be allowed to have more political power than me based on having slaves.
Right.
So when you hear that saying about three-fifths, you are counted as three-fifths, you thought of three-fifths, and we weren't the only one. White people, white men who did not own any land, landless white men, were also unable to vote. So
there was property requirements, absolutely.
Right.
I did misspeak on that, and that it was the other way around, as you just said.
Yes.
That the Southern states wanted to get in terms
of
representation.
I'm glad you clarified that, because you guys are the historical folks much more than I am, so I have to listen more than talk in certain instances. Thank you for clarifying that, Leslie. And then I think that one of the points you bring up again is how that is very relevant to our black men in prison not being allowed to vote. And so
comes around and it goes around.
Well, there's a correlation. When we talk about this penal system, I tell people it's really a form of modern-day slavery in many ways.
Even beyond
men behind bars not having the right to vote. You're basically removing them from society completely, not just physically, but completely, because they can't.
Let me just
go ahead,
explain.
Now you're getting me on this whole blackmail thing.
We all have our enthusiasm.
Because I want to clear this up. They're not being removed from society. they're being removed to a different society, and they're being counted as someone else's part, someone else's
That's
population.
Right. Chattel. Chattel.
They're basically chattel, right,
right,
Leslie?
Chattel, I don't know. That, I think that's too strong of a word. But because we run around and we use these terms about we were considered three-fifths of a man, and it's so untrue, until we really know the history and know how we got this far as African-Americans, these things will repeat itself. So now when you put an African-American in jail and you move them to a prison system in a very small community, they get the census. They get counted as part of another community census, and they get all the political power for having that prison system in their small towns. So their population increases. Their population increases because of those prisoners that's in their town now, and they get every grant associated with that, with those inmates being in there and being counted as part of their census. So it's the same thing repeating itself. It's just that we haven't taken the time to read the Constitution, understand who said what during the debate of the Constitution, and know that the truth about it so that we can protect it and protect our rights and not pass on these hideous comments and statements about the past that's so untrue. Like, so we are not considered three-fifths of a man. And like I said, the Constitution, the slavers wanted us to be considered a whole so that they could get the political power that came with the census and the representation. Right. So
well,
our show
yes.
is over right now. I apologize for cutting.
No,
short,
no, no. We have to share. We have to share accurate information, Leslie. So anytime you need to jump in to keep us two buffoons from going to completely off the deep end, please pull us back. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. And again, for my listeners, everything that I'm talking about as far as the census and the three-fifths clause is in my book. The Gist of Freedom is Still Faith. It is free online under Google. You can read it for free on my website, thegistoffreedom.com, www.gistoffreedom.com, and you'll find a lot of facts in my book that you won't find anywhere else.
And you know, one of the things I'd like to chime in, because what you're saying right now, Leslie, is very, very vital to us, not just as communities of adults, but especially, as both of you know, in my work with children, is that they need to have this knowledge, because information is power. And our children need to have a better sense of, you know, our role, not only in this country, but even on a global scale, going back to us being the first people on Earth. And so when we talk about history, history to me really means your story or our story. And it's so important that we do the work that Jacob is doing and Leslie is doing in making sure that our history is not history but attached to today and attached to our understanding of ourselves and our greatness and, you know, what we've overcome as a people. And so I appreciate the work that Leslie is doing, not only as an author but also an educator. And obviously, I appreciate the work that you're doing too, Jacob. One of the things I'd like to talk about, how much more time do we have, Leslie? I know that it's past 7 o'clock. Do we have a little more time?
Yes, as long as Jacob is happy with staying a little longer, it's fine.
Oh, Jacob loves to talk.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about Jacob. Jacob loves to talk. Okay. one of the things I want to talk about, let's go through the naming rights process, and I want to know the work of the Harlem Historical Society in the renaming of streets or the adding or the appending, if you will,
co-naming
of our streets after famous African Americans, so that listeners know, especially if they're in New York or, you know, near New York, what streets are now named after famous African Americans.
Yeah, I'll start in with that in a second. I just want to mention that just very recently, I think it's been within the past like 6 weeks, that Governor Patterson did sign a law that was passed in Albany by the legislature that now will count blacks who are incarcerated in their home districts. Finally,
okay.
after decades.
Is this a state law or is this
state,
is this
state law? New York state law.
Okay. Well, that's because
this has been egregious for decades, and it basically perpetuated, especially senatorial districts that otherwise would have been way too small to be a senatorial district. So, it enabled Republicans to stay in power upstate by counting black bodies in prisons upstate. So, it's funny how that recapitulated itself from, this disproportionate handling of bodies in the Constitution was recapitulated in electoral politics in New York State. of course, that directly relates to, the policies and laws of the state that we live under. This stuff remains absolutely relevant today. I'll run down some of the people that we got honored, and I just did a new list, because it's so many names. Sometimes I lose track myself.
Mm-hmm.
We got A. Philip Randolph honored with a boulevard. All of 145th Street, river to river. We got Billie Holiday honored, Madam C.J. and her daughter Alelia Walker. We got honored on 136th Street between 6th and 7th. They had a double townhouse that was called the Black Tower. It's located where the County Cullen Library is right now. I did get Charles Hamilton Houston a boulevard on 155th Street between Edgecombe and the McCombs Dam. Dorothy Maynor, the founder of the Harlem School of the Arts, we got the block from 141st to 145th Street on St. Nicholas Ave, named after her. I really like this one. I got the intersection of 139th Street in Lenox, named after Jack Johnson, Jack Johnson Plaza, which, people don't know, but he owned the Cotton Club before it was the Cotton Club. And,
wow.
It was called the Club Deluxe, so he had a connection to Harlem, the first black heavyweight champ, so that's like really cool history, and it gave us a chance to honor Jack Johnson, who, was well known, but he hadn't been honored like he should. Because he did a lot of cool things in his life, God knows. We got Judge Bruce Wright honored, sometimes known as Turn 'em Loose Bruce, but he was a great legal scholar, and I did that in connection and in cooperation with his family, and they're very, very proud of that. We're looking forward to having those ceremonies, God knows, sometime, I hope, next spring, where we'll actually put the sign up. James Weldon Johnson Plaza, the intersection of 135th and 7th Avenue. Count Basie, we got honored. 160th Street between Edgecombe and St. Nicholas. Got these tennis courts, the Harlem River tennis courts, by the Harlem River between 150th and 152nd Street, named after Althea Gibson, which is like really cool because that's where she learned to play tennis when she was a little girl.
Wow, fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Langston Hughes. Sugar Ray Robinson. Sugar Ray Robinson way. He and his wife owned like half of the block on 7th Avenue between 123rd and 124th Street. That's maybe you remember that movie, with Eddie Murphy and Red Fox and Harlem Nights. and they had this this nightclub that they owned in the movie. Well, that nightclub, that was Sugar Ray's. Sugar Ray Robinson owned that nightclub. It was on that block. And they owned a real estate company and a beauty shop and so on. So we got that block named after Sugar Ray Robinson. We got the block behind the Apollo, 126th Street, between 7th and 8th, named after James Brown. That was quite a story. we got 150th Street between 7th and 8th, which is, where the Dunbar is, named after Dr. Kenneth B. and his great wife, Dr. Mamie Phipps Clark. We got that named after them. They started in the Northside Children's Center in the basement of the Dunbar apartment complex. And that was in the late 1940s. And they saved many, many young black children from getting labeled retarded by the New York City educational system. So, just incredible, and wonderful that they did that. And continue
so what do you
to
have,
do
what,
it.
What's coming up? Do you have any new street co-naming of African Americans coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, actually. Let's see. Within the next month, we hope to have Hubert Harrison and Scott Joplin approved.
Okay, great. And,
maybe Willie Mays. and that's involved because he's still alive, so that actually contravenes the current guidelines. But I'm told that, believe it or not, Councilman Yudanis Rodriguez, who's Dominican, and represents that part of Washington Heights, that the street that we proposed get named after Willie Mays, which skirts where the Polo Grounds used to be, where the New York Giants played, and where he brought the World Series trophy to the Polo Grounds, to Harlem, to New York City. Good old Willie Mays. I really want to see him. I want to see the twinkle in his eye if we can hand him the street sign. That would be, so cool. So we're hoping that that'll get voted on at the next, vote by the city council. It got approved about 2 years ago, but they refused to let it come up for a vote because he was still alive, which is, one of those problems of the way the guidelines were, the way they interpreted the guidelines. It's, I don't know why it's seen as a courageous act to honor Willie Mays, but, it's the way the leadership works, unfortunately. Hubert Harrison was, was a great, thinker, really in many ways on par with W.E.B. Du Bois as an analyst of our society, and he profoundly influenced both A. Philip Randolph and Marcus Garvey. And Scott Joplin, of course, the father of ragtime. Mm-hmm. And in East Harlem, we're looking to get Constance Baker Motley, James Baldwin, of course, the great author, and I think my first white person, Bobby Darin.
The shark.
Who was born on the corner of, not on the corner, but in a building located on the corner of 2nd Avenue and 125th Street. And, the people in Harlem that I mentioned, that we're thinking about getting Bobby Darin honored, they're very enthusiastic about it. I think that they are delighted to have a cool guy like Bobby Darin as an adopted Harlemite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we wrap things up, it's about a quarter after the hour. Again, you're listening to the Gist of Freedom is Faith radio show. Our special guest tonight is Jacob Morris, director of the Harlem Historical Society. We've been talking about the co-naming of New York City streets after famous African Americans. And it's always a pleasure to have you on our show, Jacob. But before we go, I want to talk a little bit about the posters I know that you recently developed that speak to the value of an education. As our listeners know, I work with the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo as well as the youth movements that are cropping up all over this country. And I think it's so important to be creative in terms of how we reach and teach our children, clearly understanding that our educational system is failing, our children aren't failing, and it's up to us to step in and step up, if you will, if we're going to reverse the condition of our young generation. Jacob, you had a product that I got to see early on in its infancy that spoke to the value of an education. I'd like you to share that with our listeners, if you'd be so kind, before we wrap up tonight's show.
Oh, well, you know, you're a sweetheart, Lee. and I know how deeply you care about this. And well, you know, frankly, I've been thinking about, you know, a poster that would communicate visually the disparity in lifetime earnings depending on your level of educational completion. So, you know, literally it amounts to millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, there's this bar graph that was put out by the Census. They had a report in, I think, 2006 called The Big Payoff. And it dealt with lifetime earnings. And so, you know, it's like very little for the high school dropouts, and then it's like this great big bar, you know, if you got a professional degree or a PhD or a master's or something like that. You know, and there was, you know, quite a bit of visual impact from that bar graph. And given that too many of our young people, you know, don't think about the consequences of their actions when they're young, they don't think about tomorrow much. And I don't think they really had or have quite a few of our young people have, you know, like a real knowledge or understanding of how major the disparity in lifetime earnings is, you know, that it does amount to millions and millions of dollars. So if they stay with it, if they decide that they want to learn, that they want to get their knowledge certified, that they want to complete these different stages of getting their knowledge certified through the educational system, that it does pay off for them in major, major positive ways. And you know, the visual impact, I mean, this is how, you know, one of the most effective ways that knowledge is communicated is visually. So finally, I designed a poster. And, you know, the funny thing, Lee, is, as you know, but I have a funny feeling the listeners don't know, is no one had ever done a dropout prevention poster in color. You know, just that alone is, like, amazing. So, you know, and I combined this with, you know, certain wise sayings, and we called it, you know, or life lessons, you know, short and pithy life lessons. And there's, like, an authenticity to the way it communicates with the young people and not about them, so they don't feel that they're getting talked down to or about, but that it's speaking to them and their hearts. And, of course, the central visual element of this, you know, beautifully colored three-dimensional bar graph of lifetime earnings by educational completion really is, mm-hmm. is the hook, you know. And it's called the cost of your choice. You know, and some people even asked me, they said, well, why did you give it that title, Jacob? And I didn't know consciously why I gave it that title, or even why I said the cost of your choice and not, let's say, the cost of your choices. But down underneath the graph, the visual image of the graph, I have honor yourself. And then I defined my version of what I think honor yourself means, which is that we should fulfill our potential, whatever that happens to be, which is something I profoundly believe in. And so it came to me that it was not the choices, but the big choice, the ultimate choice in life, which is to honor yourself, to go through life honoring yourself by doing the best you can to fulfill your own potential.
Right.
To be all that you could be, or as Shakespeare said, you know, to thine own self be true.
Right. Well, and it really does speak to the value of an education, even a faulty one, in terms of what your earning potential is. And I think that's very important. It does a very good job validating that information.
But, you know, I also make the point that it's more than just money. It's about how you go through life. You know what? Who you become as a human being,
right.
and then by fulfilling your potential and your talents and your aptitudes, that then as a byproduct you just make considerably more money, but also
Jacob,
to understand the rules of our society, you know, which
right.
is that I make a point about, you know, our society runs on certified knowledge. Certify your knowledge. Get a diploma. But what does that, why is that the way that is? Well, now, you know, the speed of decision making means that when the human resources or job interviewers, they look at you and then they say, well, you know, what's your certification? What licenses do you have? What diplomas do you have? And if you don't have them, you go in the round file, because there's so many people that do have those certifications that they're looking for. And that's what I call the speed of decision making. The decision makers don't waste time with those that don't have the what they call the minimum qualifications to get over those hurdles in the interviews. So that's the game. And the young people appreciate that authenticity.
Right. Okay. Well, before we wrap up the show, Jake, where can people get more information about your poster?
Oh, gosh. Now, that's a good question. They can email me at blackorchidxl at gmail.com. That's BLACKOR. CHID, the letter X and the letter L, at gmail.com, and I'll be happy to respond.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you for being a wonderful guest on the Gist of Freedom of Faith radio show. So,
and I want to thank you for being a wonderful host.
No, you're very, very welcome. My pleasure. And I hope our listeners learned a little bit about our history and about the great work of the Harlem Historical Society in the co-naming of streets here in New York City after our famous African-Americans of many different ilks. And I'd like to welcome you back sometime in the future to give us an update. And I'd like to thank our executive producer, Leslie Gist Etheridge, author of The Gist of Freedom is Still Faith, and again, a wonderful educator in her own light and might. Our goal with this show is, again, to connect our people, and in my heart, especially our youth, with our great heritage, our great culture, our great history, and make sure that they understand that it is called history, but it is, again, our story and your story. And it's so important that we create a greater understanding of what has come before us, so that we know what can become of tomorrow. And it's always a pleasure to host the show.
That was beautifully
Thank
put,
you.
Lee.
Thank you. My name is R. Lee Gordon with the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo. We're building youth movements community by community so that we can make the too often unmet needs of our children a greater fulfilled priority in this country. I welcome you to be a part of that progress. I can be reached at 734-395-3079. And I just, again, like to thank our listeners for joining us on this installment of The Gist of Freedom is Faith. Thank you all. God bless.
Do.